From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
She's a woman who believes in making her faith come alive through her ministry and work with students of all ages. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is the Associate Dean of the Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel at Howard University, Dr. Kanika McGee. Welcome.
Hello.
So you were born in New Orleans, Louisiana. Tell me a little bit about your childhood and what it was like growing up.
Well, I will start with the bias statement that I love New Orleans. I think it's the greatest place on earth. It is a city that is so full of culture, the mix of French culture, Spanish culture, the mix in terms of African American history was amazing for me. And so I grew up in the midst of quite a bit of diversity, and I grew up in a very close-knit family that really stressed the importance of education, the importance of being exposed to different things, and really connecting me with so many different experiences throughout my life.
Do you have siblings?
No, I'm an only child.
Okay, and what was that like in terms of neighborhood dynamics as you were growing up?
For me, I honestly didn't miss it until someone brought it to my attention. And so friends who had siblings always kind of made an issue of it. And certainly as I've become an adult, the favorite line is, well, you must have been spoiled if you were an only child. I don't think that I was spoiled, but I did learn what it meant to be alone. And I learned to be comfortable with myself in addition to being comfortable with others. And that's something that served me well, particularly as a minister in leadership positions, that sometimes I've had to be alone. And the comfort that I grew in that at an early age has been significant to me.
Tell me about your experiences with your faith as you were growing up.
I grew up in what is really a predominantly Catholic community. New Orleans has a very strong Catholic heritage. I grew up, though, in the AME Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, which has a long-standing history as it relates to African Americans here in our country. And so for me, I grew into an early understanding of the value of different belief systems, even within the same faith, that we confess the same Jesus, but we have very different perspectives on what that meant. And so even from an early age, I began to understand the importance of religious dialogue, of understanding, and of learning about others.
What brought you to Howard University for your education?
Someone came to my high school recruiting for a program in actuarial science. And I came to Howard and spent most of a summer as a high school student at what was then the Bethune Dormitory, which is no longer with us. And I left that summer understanding that I did not want to be an actuary, but that I did definitely want to be a student at Howard University. I've often reflected on Zora Neale Hurston's words, you have taken me in, and I'm just a tiny part of your greatness. And I began to realize that at that point, and knew when I left that I had to come back to Howard.
So what would you tell us about your academic pursuits at the university, and what led you to the School of Business and then ultimately to our School of Divinity?
I have always had a love for numbers and an acuity for problem solving. And so as I searched to try to figure out what I was going to do with my life, those who were around me who were very wise said, well, why don't you think about accounting? That's something for numbers and people who are business oriented. And so I came here as an accounting major, honestly, on the advice of the people around me that I respected. As I grew into my understanding, I grew to really fully understand that my love for numbers was more so that love for problem solving. And so, though I started as an accountant, I ended up moving over into the consulting arena and being able to look in organizations, put the pieces together, understand and articulate things that they could not necessarily see for themselves. It was during my time at Howard as an undergrad that I actually, in retrospect, now know that I was beginning to struggle with this call to ordained ministry. I was hungry for what God was telling me to do, what my belief systems were, and what that meant for my life. And so eventually, after going on and getting another degree at another university, came back to Howard to get my Master of Divinity so that I could pursue that. At the time, I was volunteering in the church every day, and really recognizing that there was something more, something different that I needed to do. And so getting both of those degrees honestly has helped me to bridge this gap and to have a conversation, at least with myself and even now with others, about how both my faith and my business acumen connect to one another. So faith isn't just something on the holy days, but it's something that I can live out every day of my life.
Now, when you look at the modern day church in all its varied forms and the business of the ministry, and I hope my audience will forgive me for using that phrase, but what do you see as the challenges and how those challenges should be met by the current congregations and clergy in the modern day church as it relates to finances?
One ongoing challenge, which I think is more apparent now as we have increased in diversity and in our nation, as well as increased in a global awareness, is the question of how do we get along with others who believe differently from us? That's within the Christian faith and that's beyond the Christian faith. Gone are the days where we can simply profess what our individual belief is and not worry about what our neighbors think and believe. As we look at the 1960s civil rights movement in particular, I think that becomes one of those guides for what is needed next. It is an example of a major movement that changed the face of this nation and even the world because people of different faiths were willing to come together and to focus on what they can really agree on and not simply on the doctrine that we often disagree on. But it also becomes a question for us because that is one of those major moments that we often look to and consider as kind of a lesson of how do we put together a movement? How do we make a difference on such a large scale? And so it is also then becomes the question for the church, what next? The church was pivotal in that time. And so we cannot rest on what happened and the successes that occurred during those decades. But we have to now look at how can the church be a part of and be a leader in the movements that are relevant to the next generation and the generations that will come after ours.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Kanika McGee, Associate Dean of the Andrew Rankin Chapel. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So along those lines, looking at the movement that and the role the church plays in it, where do you see finances playing a role in that modern day church trying to meet that need that to in that movement?
We are in a capitalistic society, and so we understand that finances are often the means for the needs that occur. And so we do have to be very clear about the reality that homelessness and solving that problem is going to take money, that solving problems of poverty, of hunger, solving disparities in healthcare, that it's going to take money to bring the services to the people who need them, to do the research and change the systems that are necessary to make that happen. There's also an importance in terms of policy and our need to be advocates on a political level, and that's local, statewide, and also national, understanding that those are the people and the systems that can really make a difference for us. It is always amazing to me when I think about the history of churches, when I think about the history of even HBCUs, and how those who had so little were able to build so much with so little. And it really becomes a challenge to all of us today who have more than our ancestors and forefathers and foremothers had, that if they were able to do such great things with the little bit that they had, that we must determine and figure out how to do much more with the more that we have in this day and age.
So the megachurch today has a lot. And if you look at the megachurch today, its reach is wide and far. But what is your perspective on it meeting the need of the downtrodden?
I don't think that any church can be put in a box. There are definitely some mega churches that fall short. And there are some small churches that fall short. I would dare say there are other faith groups and organizations and spiritual groups that also fall short. And then there are many mega churches, small churches, other spiritual and faith-based groups that do meet the needs. And so for me, I think one of the most important things is to look and discover those places that are meeting the needs, to look at those who are setting the example, to look at those who are providing opportunities for their congregations and their leadership, to really go out and connect with the community, and then to learn from them and to focus our energy and our attention on them and to celebrate them so that we can rewrite the narrative. Oftentimes we focus on those things that depress us and, you know, undermine our sense of hope. And there are so many that can do that. But there are, on the other side, so many that can inspire us. It's similar to the conversation of Howard University. We focus often in media, in culture, on the African-American students who aren't making it. Look at the almost 11,000 that we have here who are, and rewrite the narrative with those stories.
Now, in your role at Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel, you coordinate the Interfaith Education and Programming Vocational Discernment Initiatives, and you also support students in the process of spiritual and ethical leadership development. Tell me a little bit about those roles and what you think, as we talk about higher education today, what role does that play in making sure the students here at the university get a holistic experience?
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions, the deep questions. Those questions include, how do I learn about a culture and a belief system different from mine? And how do I really fully determine what it is that I believe? And then to step forward from that and begin to ask the question, how do I build a bridge between that and the rest of my life so that my faith is not simply something that's private or something that's taboo or something that is only celebrated on holy days or Sabbaths, but that it's something that I can live out? Because at the end of the day, when we look at the realities around us, people's faiths and belief systems impact politics, they impact economics, they impact whether or not we're going to have peace or war, they impact our human resources, our customer relations, they impact healthcare, they impact every aspect of culture. And so for us, we have to be able to equip our students to have those conversations so that they can go out not just carrying their degree, but honestly, so that they can go out and carry this world on their shoulders and carry the needs and the deep issues and the concerns and make a difference.
The data suggests that there are more people now in that age group that don't believe in God, as opposed to probably when you attended Howard. Do you think those questions are being asked as frequently as it was in your time, or for that matter, as deeply and profoundly as it was in your time? And if not, you know, what do you suggest as solutions to really prick the consciousness of our students in that direction?
I honestly think that the question is being asked more. When I was here in the 1990s, there was a foregone conclusion that you went and you held on to whatever it was that you came here with. But in this age where there is globalization, where the diversity of belief systems is really in our face in a different way, it provides opportunities and pushes our students and all of our community really to ask the questions that would not have been asked before. I often tell students who come to my office, you know, if you came here for 4 years and left knowing all of the same things that you knew when you came, we would look at you and scratch our heads and wonder, what were you doing if you still knew the same things about literature, about science, about mathematics? It's the same thing with faith. If you come here and after 4 years you leave knowing the exact same things about God, about belief systems, about self, about spirituality that you knew when you got here, then we have missed an opportunity. They are here at a critical developmental phase. And it is imperative that that developmental phase be used to allow them to go deeper. And in going deeper, it's not something that will necessarily cause someone to lose their faith. It will hopefully cause them to go deeper in their faith, but go also deeper in an understanding of others and an understanding of those things that connect us beyond our faith traditions.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Kanika McGee, Associate Dean of the Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel. And I think you would agree that there's no bigger question than what you believe in and why. And I think that she certainly is helping our students ask that question and certainly guiding them to that answer. I'm Dr. Wayne Fedrick. Please join me the next time for The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.